Good afternoon, people on the internet and my general social media, because this probably isn't going much further than that. Apparently there's a few people that actually listened to the worst ever reading of Ulysses, which is what this podcast originally set off to be. It was a lockdown project that has been long since abandoned, and nary shall I ever return to it. Will I? I don't know. Fuck, I don't know. What am I doing today? So this is the Shite Talking Half Hour, or thereabouts. My name is Connor Charlton, as you may probably all know me. I am a mediocre actor, writer, producer, guy who works in financial services for one of the big four, a socialist sellout. But we're doing what we can. But today's topic, which is just because I've been talking about it earlier, is about the world of acting, which I happen to be involved with in some regard. And it's about my worst ever acting experiences. So, what can I tell you? How did I get into acting? I did a little bit of acting in school. I always kind of wanted to go down the acting path, but I didn't think I was good enough. Still don't think I'm good enough. It's this constant thing that actors have, this niggling self-doubt and feeling that you are like Sisyphus trying to battle uphill. Especially when only about 9% of professional actors can make acting their sole existence and sole living. I did my A-levels, I did drama, I dropped the line on stage, and then rather than just like, you know, pushing through and forgetting about it, I restarted the scene, which was great for the other actor, and I do apologise, even though she ended up being a massive dick, to her boyfriend by sleeping on with two of my friends. I'll not name names. I mean, it was 18 years ago. We should let that grudge go, even for my poor friend that got cheated on, and my two friends got the clap. But let's talk. A-levels got the drama bug. You know, left it a couple of years. I came back and I did theatre society when I was doing my history degree. I've done one play where my acting was terrible because I basically just I wasn't unable as an actor to laugh, so I just did this like really strange smug chipmunk style expression by pulling the rock, one eyebrow up, Roger Moore smirk thing. Which brought no end of laughter in the flat of stunners that I live with. So that kind of put me off a little bit. And then the next thing I did was Journey's End, great World War One play. And the lead, fantastic actor, I think he's now retired from acting, which is a shame, but hopefully he's, you know, at peace with that. And I think he's married, has a kid, and he's moving forward with other things. We were doing this strange exercise to get us in the mindset of being soldiers, and we did this made assault course, and he landed and rolled his ankle and fractured his foot about 2 weeks out from the play going on, and that was him. There was no understudy. That was the end of it. Off we moved on, something else. Then there's a big gap. That was I was 22 at the time, and I came back in acting after traveling around Southeast Asia going, what do I want to do when I come home? I still haven't figured my life out. Still haven't figured out a career path. Let's give this acting shit a go. So, you do short films for a bit. You work with students. You go to fairly mediocre workshops because maybe you've missed the boat to get the youth funding, and get mucked around by students who, in fairness, they barely know how to work camera themselves, barely know how to edit. It's part of their learning experience is making this film. And sometimes you get something good out of it, and other times you never see the footage, and you're kind of almost glad at times. You know, it's kind of, you know, sometimes the footage should never see the light of day, because by the time they've got it edited, you've learned a few things as an actor and you're moving on vastly. So did some extras work on a lesser known TV show. I doubt you would have heard of it, called Game of Thrones. Virtually everybody in Belfast who wasn't in the paramilitary organisations, wasn't working in a call centre, wasn't on the dole, were involved in this. And in fact, some of those three groups may have been heavily represented within the Game of Thrones extras community. And, you know, there's a lot of days where you're just standing around getting stoned for 9 hours a day. I wrote a whole article about it. I might record it once or twice some point, because it's quite funny. I think I like to believe I'm funny, even though I'm not. I'm probably just an unfunny wanker. You're often crawling around in mud and just getting seriously wet, seriously cold, and, you know, looking for your ninth meal a day, because that's what I was on. Had that, I had somehow got into the Royal Center School of Speech and Drama, which is one of the most heavily respected drama schools in the world. I'm not quite sure why. Probably because I had the likes of Judi Dench, James Nesbitt, Andrew Garfield, Laurence Olivier, and a whole rig of other actors whose names I'd have to look up, but I won't right now. So I did that. It's 2017. I graduated. I haven't got an agent. I thought I was going to have an agent. Didn't happen. Meet a taxi driver when I'm moving house, and we're moving all the way from Finchley Road to Putney, and we get chatting, and he says he's an actor, and I'm going, is he just an extra? Well, he's done a tiny bit of acting, and he's represented by this agency. It's basically representing kids, and they are hustlers. There's a middle-aged woman from Essex, overweight, got one eye, and she charges me to join the agency. Now, if you know anything about agencies, I think that's either illegal or it's really frowned upon within the industry. So she represented me, put up for commercials and that, and finally I land one, and it's a charity campaign, and it's not great paid, but you want it anyway. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, acting work, amazing. £300 a day, I think it's brilliant. Now, for one day's work, that does seem great, but when you find out that poster campaign is used literally everywhere, on every single bus, bus stops, airports, everywhere, then you should get what is known as a buyout. And it's basically a right to use your image in advertising campaigns. And something as big as that, you're talking, you know, 20 grand plus. So probably enough for me to go, I'm going to put the bartending aside, I'm going to put the rest of it aside, and I'm just going to focus on being a better actor, on making my own work, and try to climb the ranks as an actor. You know, go to every theatre company, go to every networking night, you know, be the best possible shape I can ever be in, etc., etc. Never happened. But, you know, I catch wind that there's a better agency to join, and, you know, eventually I get into an agency. And they are kind of similar. You know, they're not as hustlers, but they basically put me up for every commercial under the sun. And commercial castings suck. No, there's no beating the bush on it. It's like, as an actor, the reason you do a commercial is because you want to be paid. Like, you like money. Maybe not even like money, but maybe need money. Maybe would enjoy the comfort of money. In the same way that, you know, that 10, 20 grand that I probably should have got for that poster campaign would have, you know, afforded me a nice little buffer, a nice little cushion to rest up on. I'm doing my best. I'm going to these commercials. It's a McDonald's one where I'm supposed to be a mountain climber, and I bring in a whole big hoodie in the middle of July. I've got a woolly on. I've got these poles and stuff hanging out of this big rucksack. I've got muddy shoes. I go all out. I do absolutely everything I can. And maybe you get a pencil, which means that, you know, they think they're going to get the job to you. And then they don't tell you until the day before, even though you've booked the day off work, that you don't have it and they've got some with somebody else. And this really should be frowned upon. It really should be scrapped, but it isn't. That happens a few times. Eventually, I land one for Strepsils, or originally it's going to be used for Strepsils. And it involves an older lady and myself. We're in these big plastic bubbles. We're on a carriage that goes from Waterloo to Heathrow. It's the Heathrow Express, and the idea is it's some sort of protective bubble thing, and we are trying to shelter from germs and disease and bacteria and that, be safe. That's cool. You know, they use it in Germany and Austria. They use it again in Germany and Austria next year, and they use it in American GP offices. So each time, you know, they give me like a nice little bump, and that felt great, because whilst it was only maybe £800-900 at a time, that always seemed to land when my bank account was in dire straits and I was going, shit, I have, you know, I had one or two nights out or something like that, and you manage to spunk £200 a time, and you're going, how the fuck am I going to survive to the end of the month? And then boom, this comes in, and you're like, oh, pressure's off, just for a few weeks. Not that 10, 20 grand buffer, but just, ooh, that feels good. But the commercial castings that really stood in my mind are very weird ones. So one of them was for a Huawei kind of Fitbit kind of watch, you know, I think of your Apple Watch, and one that they wanted somebody who was athletic, but not too athletic, you know, maybe somebody who was a regular gym goer, but, you know, still enjoyed a beer. In my case, I probably enjoyed too many beers, and, you know, I've got this, what I sometimes jokingly refer to as a skinny fat body, that, you know, is what Conor McGregor famously called Nate Diaz, you know, skinny fat, where it's I'm not proper plump, but you know, even at my skinniest, there's a kind of extra layer of fat there. So she has me, you know, just one female cast actor, take my top off, run around the room, you know, to see me sweaty and see me in action. And that was, you know, that's the closest I've had to sort of a Weinstein-y situation. Okay, I can live with that one. I can live with that one. That's not too bad. Another one I had was my agent calls me up on a Thursday afternoon. And he says, Connor, you do wrestling, don't you? I said, well, I do a bit of MMA, so there's a wee bit of wrestling in it, but, you know, you've got to know there's a difference between that kind of Olympic style, you know, catch or freestyle wrestling than there is to WWE wrestling. It's not professional wrestling. No, it's fine. I knew this cunt didn't know the fucking difference. But he says, can you bring a friend? And okay, so I ring my friend Lewis and I get him to do it. Now, Lewis is a tonked black dude. He's about 5'10", but he's just dense. He's just like a proper rugby prop build, and that's where he played when he played rugby. Kicked my ass in virtually any martial art, but I feel like Lewis lived for two things. One of them is to see, you know, a big girl's booty jiggle, and another one is to take the piss out of me. Not kick the shit out of me, just joke at me. Just, you're like, you know, just absolutely rinse me. Because I would do something hilarious, or just my natural being would make him laugh. And I get to this building now. It's in Brixton, and it's this old stone house, but the inside is gutted. It's almost like this grey stone house all over. But in the middle, there's a giant fucking wrestling ring, and there's these two dudes, you know, they're tonked. You know, clearly they're pro wrestler dudes. They look like Triple H circa 1998. They're talking fucking proper Attitude days. And they're doing all the moves, they're suplexing, and they're Irish whipping, they're proper grappling. I'm going, oh my god. You know, I said the casting director, I'd spoken to you a few times, and she apparently asked me specifically, because she quite liked me, so I think she was very close to casting me from another one at one point. I said, look, it's been a bit of a confusion here with my agent. I don't do this kind of wrestling. I'm MMA kind of stuff. And she said, no, it's fine, I've had MMA guys. So the poor thing is that you can act. I'm like, okay. So Lewis arrives, and at this point there's two super hot girls and almost like a leotards or whatever it is, and one does this kind of like stars and stripes, you know, people's elbow thing. So it's very cool, you know. And Lewis just looks at me, laughing at me, going, Connor, what the fuck is this? You know, what have you got yourself into? And I'm like, don't start, Lewis. Just don't start. So they finish, and Catherine says, okay, we'll get you up there. Girl, would you mind sticking around to choreograph these guys? And they're like, okay, yeah, no worries. So they teach us to tie up, and it's like this whole grappling thing, and Then Lewis Irish whips me into the corner, and then he frog splashes me. I think it's what it's called, you know, jump bash thing into me, and I'm like, it hurt, yeah. And then I do this some sort of like RKO kind of thing where I grab the back of his head and I run and I jump. And the way I landed, and I'm 31 at this point in time, I'm 35 right now, and if I sneeze too hard, I will pull a muscle in my back and I'll be spasming for days. I'll get the Voltron right straight away. But I'm 31 and my back is in agony. And I'm thinking, how the fuck do wrestlers wrestle in their mid-50s? Not a clue. But I get up. You know, at this point, the woman's like, okay, you gotta do the regal acting here. So you've got this middle-aged woman, and first off, you're just jeering at her, and then, you know, she does something, you know, and you're like, oh shit, you know, you're genuinely afraid for. I don't want you overacting this. I don't want you like. I want this to be believable fear, conceivable fear. You know, I do what I can, but you know, my eyes are like wide. You know, I'm you know, try to act afraid. You know, but you know, the whole situation is so strange and foreign that, you know, the only way I could be afraid at that point in time was genuine ISIS to rock up and behead someone in front of me. So, you know, I finished that up. I'm walking away, and Lewis goes, "Well, Connor, do you think you got the job?" I'm like, "Do you think I got the fucking job?" Oh, Dios mío. So, the last one, probably the worst one, was no. We'll throw the other one. We got time. So another one I had, drank way too much on the Saturday. I'd gone to, on the Sunday, I'd gone to sparring. I'd gone to mixed martial arts gym, and I was sparring against this 17-year-old, and he was hungry. He had a pro fight coming up, and I said, "Hey, buddy, you know, I had a few too many last night. I haven't eaten today. You know, just take it easy. You know, I got work and stuff tomorrow." He clearly doesn't hear me, or doesn't understand me, or doesn't listen. One of the three. There's only three. You know, maybe I think my accent's quite thick. Maybe I was wearing a gum piece at the time. Maybe I'm hungover. You know, London kid probably not gonna understand what I'm saying. And he's sparring me. I'm dodging. I'm moving. I'm parrying. And he hits me with a double jab that I parry both shots, and then boom, right on cue, right down the pipe, the old 112, right, just cracks me right in the sinking of my eye. And I knew straight away, that's a black eye. But I go, the next day, still feeling hungover, slightly sunburned at this point, I got to pretend to be a male nurse who is on the way to work after a long week. On a bus and really enjoying a croissant. But at this point in time of day, I was like one of the last ones there, and it's a stale bread roll that I have to pretend that I'm really enjoying whilst hungover, and I've got concealer on my face trying to cover up the big black mark. Anyway, the last one. This one will stick with me to the end of my days, no doubt about it. So I was in, too much flow, and I'm talking too fast, way too fast. If you understand me, well done. So where was I? Prepared was I? Shame. Was that Wu-Tang? What happened? So I am in this casting. I'm the first one for this casting, and I suppose if it's for some car ad. The last one, the wrestling was from car insurance, by the way. The croissant one was for Lidl, I think it was, or some sort of Aldi supermarket. This one's a weird one. This is a car advert, and it's kind of a comedy thing. And the first one is, you're a guy and you've been having an affair with a woman, and her husband comes back and you panic, so you run out, you realize you're on the balcony, the husband's coming in and he's angry, and you look down and there's a big drop, and you're panicking, but you see your car and go, everything's all right. And then the next part was, you are a secret agent or something like that, and there's these two henchmen that are drowning you and pushing your head into a big thing of water. And they had this transparent Perspex box, just this one casting director, and the first one in, and I have to help him fill this thing with water, and then I have to dunk my head into it. But then I go, I need to add more water because I can't reach any. I need to get further down. I was like, okay, so put more water in. And then I've got my head in this thing, and he's like, can you make more bubbles? And I'm like, so I'm doing this noise. I'm trying to get the bubbles going. It must be like 15 seconds of me practically drying myself. And then bring my head up. And he goes, okay, yeah, that's, I've seen it. Thanks for doing that. So I leave. And he'd go through maybe two doors and I'm on the street. And I go, fuck. I had the worst hiccups. I hadn't had hiccups in months as bad as this. This was like basically being punched in the throat, sore hiccups. And I thought to myself, that cunt better give me the fucking job. Of course, he didn't. So that continued on for a bit, you know, castings here and there and going to them. And the last one I had before lockdown was for a phenomenal show based on a very popular pulpy book series, which is probably, you know, considered trash by some and good fun by others, the Reacher show. Jack Reacher, Lee Child's Jack Reacher. So go on the Friday afternoon, I'm told, you know, you've got this Jack Reacher casting on Monday morning, and you know, I'm out of shape, I'm 97 kilos, and you know, I have never heard of these books. Well, I have heard of them, but I've never read them. So I pick up this book and I start reading, you know, pretty much half the novel. I start lifting weights this weekend, I'm going to the gym like I've never gone to the gym before, even though I've got to go to, you know, do some bar shifts. On the Sunday I'm due to meet this actor who had been taught by my previous tutor, and you know, to help her with the Northern Irish accent, and she was to help me with my script, but we ended up going to the pub, and then next thing you know, we're back at my place doing what actors do when they've had a few and been working on scripts all day, and the next day I go into this casting incredibly hungover. I am virtually falling apart. And I had 4 pages to learn of virtually all monologues. So that went done like a lead balloon. And then that's how you ended up with Alan Ritchson, who was penciled in anyway, I think, at that point, and did a phenomenal job as a character. And then lockdown hit. So we're now in the post-lockdown phase of, you know, still carrying on the acting stuff. And I probably will. You know, I'm still doing bits and pieces of it. You know, I've been in 2 feature films this year. I'm due to be in a 3rd one. I was leading one earlier this year. You know, I'm still doing short films, still doing the Obvious Street Theatre, still working away, ran my own company, making showreel scenes for actors, and, you know, put myself in the odd one whenever we couldn't find a suitable actor. And yeah, just doing bits and pieces. Still in the game, somehow. Sometimes I think maybe more, you know, going to stand-up comedy or writing or producing, directing, whatever might be more of my cup of tea, and working all of them whilst doing day jobs. So trying to keep myself in shape, and that's where we are. You tell me, is the right move? Is the wrong move? I don't know. But I guess we all forge our own path. If we have the ability to do so, they have the luck to do so, the grace to do so, the, you know, we're not completely destroyed by our financials, or, you know, having a struggle like, you know, so many people out there are, you know, trying to support a family, trying to look after disabled friends or family members, you know, it's a mixed bag. Some people have it really bad, some people have it really good. I would say I have pretty good. Still having to keep myself afloat, but still trying. But there you go. That's been close to a full shy talk and a half hour. It would be a full shy talk and a half hour if I slowed down. But, you know, I just talked to that with aggression and anger. Anyway, that's me.